Microsoft for roughly a year now. Most of my work is around big data and Internet of Things, but I have a very deep open source background, so I've been devoting a lot of time to Docker over the years. Today, we're going to talk about Docker Swarm on Azure. With a twist, we're going to scale it up and down, which is kind of different, really. So, in case you're following at home, you can tweet questions using this hashtag, or you can just tweet them at me. I'll try to follow up and reply during the session. If not, well, I'll try to reply after the session. So, what are we going to cover today? First, a little overview of how we deal with infrastructure, how that's changed over the years. Then another slightly deeper overview of Docker orchestration and what's out there right now and what you can use today. And then we're going to look at Docker Swarm and put together a full working cluster. So issues of management containers. So Docker is changing things really a lot. So right now everyone's very excited about the ways you can package and deploy applications, but there are some kinks here, because deploying a Docker applications or deploying applications using Docker is still something that the ecosystem is maturing, is still something that has a few kinks. But the big issue, the elephant in the room, if you will, is that containers don't run in a vacuum, so you need to manage the infrastructure beneath them. And there are a few extra challenges there, especially when you need to scale things up and down. But first, let's go back a few years. I mean, we all remember how it was, I think, that to size something to satisfy business requirement, buy the servers, wait like a month, if you're lucky, to have them arrive, then installing the whole thing from scratch, often connecting wires, and then after a while, either figuring out that you didn't have enough capacity for the demands, or that the systems were just sitting there. I mean, so this big waste of resources, or at least lack of focus, was mostly solved by moving to the cloud. And by moving to the cloud, I mean we gained something that is well worth the transition, which is automation. We can now automate provisioning an entire infrastructure, deploying the software, and then scaling it as required. I mean, this ties into the whole infrastructure as code movement. With Azure, you're able to do that precisely. You're able to do precisely that, to build a template and then deploy the template. But if we move from VMs to containers, well, things almost look the same. I mean, you can start with the minimum size required, but I mean, you still need to build the VMs or to deploy the VMs. And sure, I mean, you can deploy your containers pretty quickly. I mean, it's just a Docker pull away, but setting up the machines themselves still takes a lot of time. And then when you start scaling, I mean, how do you scale? Do you add machines? Do you resize the machines you have? And, I mean, when you're dealing on an orchestrator, does the orchestrator support scaling to a new set of machines? That's really, that's the kind of whole point of this masterclass, really, which is that right now, orchestrators aren't really aware of how the infrastructure works, and there's a decoupling between the world, the container world, and the VM infrastructure world that we need to address. Because, I mean, if you look at things in a broader perspective, there are these eight key aspects to consider when you start building solutions atop containers. I mean, some of them, like, for instance, I hope you can see my mouse here, a registry is often a secondary concern because most people just rely on Docker Hub. But, I mean, to do this professionally, you really need to set up your own registry and set things up properly so that your production code doesn't end up in a public network. Then you have non-distributing and logging, CI and CD, which mostly depends on how you manage your development, but I mean, I certainly hope that you're doing this. Then configuration management, which has to do with managing the VMs themselves. And then we come to the interesting bits, which are where you place the containers and how you manage resources allocated to them. And that scales up into how you deploy and manage a cluster, and then how you schedule and automate it. So service discovery is mostly an application level thing, which is how your components find each other. So I will skip that. But I mean, the key point here is that we need to couple these two. We need to couple what an orchestrator does with what a VM infrastructure does, with what Azure does. So we'll get into that in a minute. So, orchestration. Right now, there are four main options. I'll get into them as we move along. But the idea here is that all of them share a set of core functionality. You deploy these orchestrators on a predefined infrastructure, and then you use them to schedule containers. And then the orchestrator provides you with basic load balancing, monitoring, logging, etc. I mean, but what not all orchestrators provide you with are scalable networking, scalable storage, and being able to deploy applications in a consistent way. I mean, every one of them addresses these topics in a different way, and in the next few slides, I'll go over each in a high-level perspective and try to explain the differences. Okay, so this is probably the most popular solution out there. Kubernetes has a very interesting story behind it. Kubernetes is the new instantiation of what Google used to manage their infrastructure, which was an application called Borg. Borg was a generic cluster manager. And as such, it did not really understand about containers because for a long time, Google deployed applications as static binaries with everything bolted in. So they essentially built their own sort of containers, if you will, for most applications. And then when a few years ago, a group inside Google decided that they would open source Borg, or at least open source something that followed the same principles as Borg, and they came up with Kubernetes. Kubernetes has always been a very hard to manage solution. I mean, these days it's very easy, and watch out for an upcoming session that we have with a local startup that is running Kubernetes in production on top of Azure. They've ironed out all the kinks, but I mean, between amidst all of those kinks was that Kubernetes originally relied on an external etcd cluster, which was used for state management. And Kubernetes was more of a toolkit when it started out. I mean, it reused whatever networking layer you brought in, so on and so forth. Now, these days, it's more standard. And if you look for Kubernetes 1.4, you'll find that the whole setup experience is much easier. But still, the key point here is that Kubernetes uses its own CLI and terminology. So it doesn't align itself very well, due to its Borg heritage, it doesn't align itself very well with the Docker ethos and the Docker terminology and ways of deploying things. So, but it's very nice in the sense that for application managers, it supports rolling updates and rollbacks because Kubernetes itself has a very good understanding of and forces you, in fact, to deploy things in a way that is testable, and so that when you roll out a new release, you can roll it back if the need arises. So, then comes Mesos. Mesos is available in Azure Container Service. It's probably the most mature orchestrator out there at this point, at least if you look at it from the container perspective. Actually, it's not Mesos, it's Marathon, because Mesos is a stack. Mesos originated also in generic cluster management. It was used originally to manage Hadoop workloads. And atop Mesos, people started building abstraction layers. So, and the newest abstraction layer is Marathon. Marathon is a scheduler that uses Mesos services to deploy containers on a hardware cluster. So, and it provides a lot of extra features. It has built in, actually, the whole stack. The layered stack provides you with load balancing, DNS for service discovery, centralized authentication, so that can be extended to be enterprise-grade. So that's one of the reasons why we use it in Azure. But it also uses its own terminology. The good thing is that it's also very mature in terms of application deployment. So, like I have here, it supports blue-green deployments in the sense that you can have a version of your app running and then deploy a second version and then test it and then switch over, mostly transparently. And it also has the notion of an app catalog, which makes it a lot easier for you to reuse components as you evolve your solutions. Then comes a little upstart. That is actually my personal favorite, but Rainshare is a little different from the other two in the sense that it's mostly evolved alongside what then became Swarm. It was built atop Docker Composer, actually. And these days, besides its own orchestrator, which is called Kettle, it also runs Mesos and Kubernetes. So Rainshare itself is more of an infrastructure manager in the sense that it can provision VMs, but it can also use these other two orchestrators alongside its own. And you can also run a separate environment. You actually can also manage separate environments, has all sorts of access controls, and is a very, very nice first-time experience if you've never used Docker at all. It might, however, be slightly lacking in terms of integration with infrastructure. But, I mean, it's a good option to keep in mind. And finally, Swarm. Swarm, we'll get into the history of Swarm, but the big point here is that Swarm is now available out of the box. It provides, it's fully integrated with the Docker ethos, it's fully integrated with the ecosystem, it's a straightforward extension for anyone who's been using Docker for a long time. It's not quite baked yet, at least not version 1.2, 1.12. We also run, Swarm is also available as part of Azure Container Service. We're now in the process of upgrading the built-in Swarm orchestrator to 1.12. I actually don't have a roadmap for that, but there's a lot of interest right now around Swarm, and that's what we'll dive into next. But let's step back a bit and look at the broader picture here. One of the things that is missing here is capacity planning. If you look at it from an enterprise perspective, or at least if you plan to run your Docker cluster for more than a few weeks, you need to be aware that most of these orchestrators usually were originally designed to be layered atop pre-sized infrastructure. So there was, for instance, I had a couple of years ago, I actually talked to the Kubernetes team, and they had no ability to add or remove nodes in runtime, which is understandable because all of these things manage more than just containers. They manage the storage and the networking beneath that. And I mean, it's a bit complicated to go off and add and remove nodes. But I mean, right now, one of the key aspects here is that, or one of the key concerns that people have when they start deploying container infrastructure is that they want to be able to resize the physical or rather virtual infrastructure beneath those containers in order to do proper capacity planning. And right now, that's more or less available. And today I'm going to show you a very simple and, of course, very basic way of doing this on top of Swarm. So let's go into Swarm a bit. Let's go over and looking back a year or so, I remember this. Docker Swarm came from a proof of concept that then turned into a proposal, then that evolved over time into a set of extensions Docker Compose, then became its own daemon, and then over the last few months, a lot of effort was put in by the Docker team and the contributors to bake it into Docker itself, because Swarm up until, I don't know, summer, mostly. Actually, no, a bit before March or so, was mostly a separate service that was deployed alongside Docker, separate binaries, so on and so forth. But right now, it's fully integrated. And what it brings is that it brings the notion of clustering to Docker, because Docker was originally designed to be a single machine solution, and has very simple setup that we'll go into. Does orchestration in the sense that you can do rolling upgrades and scaling and so on and so forth, because it allows you to specify the state you want for your application. So you can say, I want X containers, and Swarm will try to run X containers of your application. It also provides basic service discovery features, so on and so forth. It has a very interesting networking layer. I'll get into that in a bit. And brings another item to the table that is very relevant. Swarm brings in, has a built-in CA that it uses to authenticate communication between nodes. Some of the other orchestrators didn't do that for a long time. Some came up with their own solutions, but right now you can get this out of the box with just a simple Docker install. So it's a very nice added value for those of you who worry about these things, which you should. Okay, so in terms of looking at the eight aspects that we went through earlier and trying to build a scoreboard out of this. I mean, if you look at things that Swarm is not meant to address, I mean, Swarm is not meant to address the registry. It is not supposed to address continuous integration. It should be at the end of it. It doesn't really do configuration management from an infrastructure perspective or from a software perspective. It's not really the same thing we're talking about here. But it does have fairly nice monitoring and logging features. I mean, it does need some working into. It brings service discovery to the table. It has basic DNS-based service discovery. It lets you schedule and automate the deployments just fine. I mean, it's not as good as some of the other orchestrators because it's still evolving, but it's getting there. It does resource management and placement fairly well. But what it doesn't do really, it doesn't integrate very well still with deployments or with infrastructure deployments from a hardware perspective, if you will. So you can deploy Docker Swarm, but I mean, you need to have your infrastructure predefined. So how do we start a Swarm? Couldn't be simpler. You just do Docker Swarm in it and it sets up a bunch of things that we'll get into, and it gives you a pre-baked command line that you just need to run on another node to add it to the Swarm. You just run this command line on another node, and it's automatically part of the Swarm. You can also have a token, a specific token for adding another manager, and there are a few other options, but this is the gist of it. It's just as easy as that. Okay, but what happens when we do this? I mean, this is where things get interesting. Like I mentioned before, Docker, when you do Docker Swarm in it, Docker creates a distributed state store that is then shared along all the manager nodes. And that is backed by certificate authority. And that certificate authority hands out the tokens, or rather the certificates, for the workers and the masters to talk to each other. And of course, it does master election using the Raft protocol, so that if you lose a master, the cluster will hopefully stay together. So, I mean, and getting this out of the box is amazing because on top of this, you can build all sorts of interesting infrastructure management solutions. But I mean, you still have to go over, deploy a master, get a token, deploy a worker, apply the token, deploy another worker, apply the token, so on. I mean, you can automate all of that, and that's what we'll be doing, but you still have to deploy the VMs. Right, you still have to go back into the real world, deploy the VM somehow. So, going back into networking, I did mention that the networking layer was interesting. It's very interesting in the sense that it's based on IPVS, which is NetFilter, which has been in Docker in the Linux kernel like forever. It's a very high-performance networking layer, very different in that respect from existing solutions like Flannel and so on and so forth. I mean, you can fine-tune all of them, but I mean, it's not the same as leveraging something that is built into the Linux kernel. It has some oddities that you need to be aware of. For instance, when you deploy a service, when you publish a port, using the default settings, it opens that port on every host, which is something to be aware of. I mean, you can bind those to a predefined network and so on, but I mean, you should be careful about this. And it does load balancing. It does layer 4 load balancing, which might seem a bit limiting for most people these days, because in case you're not aware of this, most orchestrators these days deal with the load balancing essentially by deploying HA proxy or something like that as a service, and then doing HTTP-based load balancing. which works but might not be suitable for everyone. I mean, any approach has its drawbacks, but you should be aware that it doesn't do HTTPS termination or it actually knows what is going on the ports, but it's there at least. But it's also not quite working yet. And so in my recent... This is improving dramatically quickly with the new version that is on Git, on Git tip. A lot of things have been fixed already. I'm going to be using the standard 1.12 in this demo, so I fully expect the load balancer to quit after I scale the cluster past a few dozen nodes. But I mean, just so you're aware that this is not quite ready yet as for production deployments, depending on your needs. I mean, if you just want to run batch services or something like that, it's perfectly fine. If you rely on load balancing, you probably want to do it externally, which is what I'm going to do. Okay. Oh, and one of the things that Swarm did was bring a new standard to the table. We already had Docker Compose files. We already had Kubernetes pods. We already had range of services. I mean, everyone was trying to do their own thing to bundle services to run. And now you have another file, which is a bundle file, which is actually another specification of what you need to run and what networks you can create and so on and so forth. It describes the connections between containers and the infrastructure at the container level, not the actual infrastructure, but it helps a lot. I will not be using bundles in this demo, but it's nice to be aware that it's there. And it's another standard. So let's get started then. Okay, so what we are going to do here is that we're going to build a cluster template. Actually, I have a pre-built one. We're not going to spend very long time on that. I'll just walk you through what we have. That builds our network, our actual storage, our actual compute resources, and deploys a few patches on the machines. Then we deploy the infrastructure, which consists of the OS and Docker Swarm. Then we're going to deploy a few applications. And then we're going to scale those applications and the infrastructure below it. Okay, so here it is. So since we're going to use Azure, I have an Azure Resource Manager template that builds this. Before we dive in, I'm going to give you a little overview. So essentially what we're going to do is that we're going to create a resource group, which is a logical grouping of resources within Azure, that consists of a set of masters, of which I'm only going to instantiate one, and a set of agents. The agents are going to be in what we call a VM scale set. I'll get into that later, but the VM scale set is essentially a cookie cutter template that allows you to instantiate multiple VMs fairly quickly, or at least much quicker than a single VM. And then those two groups of hosts will be on their separate subnets. They'll be able to talk to each other, and externally the master will have a firewall protecting it, and the agents are going to be behind an Azure load balancer, because even though we're going to use the Swarm load balancer will be there as well. This is a template that I use for a lot of projects, and there's a lot of value in being able to defer load balancing to an external infrastructure besides the Docker containers. Because, I mean, like I pointed out, the load balancer right now on Swarm is not quite baked yet, at least on the version I'm running, so I'd like to have something more reliable to handle traffic. So VM scale sets, like I told you, I mean, this goes back to the whole thing about treating your machines as cattle versus pets. I mean, you can go on and say that you fine-tune your machines, that you assign specific names and functions to each of them, but when you start doing the things at scale, that just doesn't work. I mean, what you need to do is treat your machines as cattle. I mean, you need to treat them as replaceable components, and you need to automate the whole thing behind managing them. And so VM scale sets allow you to do that on an Azure environment. Okay, let's just peek a little. Okay, right. VM scale sets can also be auto-scaled. I'm not going to be using auto-scaling in this demo, but just so that you're aware that you can define, when you create a scale set, you can say that you want a maximum and minimum number of VMs, and that you want triggers that are essentially percentages of a metric, so that the cluster scales either up or down, depending on the triggers that you specify, and that you can get notifications out of them. So you can get email, of course, I mean, but you can get webhooks and you can run Azure Automation Runbooks. So in a scenario where you use loads auto-scaling in a scale set, you can have, say, a web server pool scale up automatically. And actually, this is what is behind most of the Azure Platform as a Service services. You can have a set of VMs that will scale up according to load. And then you can have a webhook trigger something else that, for instance, if you figure out that you have twice the number of front ends at some point, you probably want to trigger the database scaling, which is a bit more complex than you originally use. So we'd probably have a webhook that will provision an extra database replica, read-only replica, so on and so forth. There's a number of things that you can do with this. And of course, you can provision the VMs. So, but before we get into that, let me just step into my little Linux environment, which is here. Okay, and I'm going to go over here. Can't see the menu right now, just one second. Okay, so I'm going to go over here and pop up Visual Studio Code. And hopefully this will be readable. Okay, so here it is, so it isn't readable. Let me just zoom in on this. Okay, now this should be good enough. Okay, so we have a custom cluster template here. And the cluster template, in case you've never actually dealt with Azure Resource Manager, is just a JSON file. You can define your whole infrastructure using this JSON file, which I will now, I can never remember the hotkeys for this. Okay, so a cluster template is essentially a JSON file, which has a set of parameters, okay, a set of variables, and the resources you want to deploy, okay? The parameters are mostly boring stuff, like this is the prefix for the master node, and each parameter has a type, default value, and some information. This is the information that gets displayed on the Azure portal if you load the template directly into the portal. But I have more interesting stuff here, like, for instance, the number of master VMs, which I'm limiting to 1, 3, or 5, because Raft, those are the ideal numbers for Raft. Any higher, really, and things start to be a little hectic, and pairs, even numbers don't work, really. It's because you can't have a master election. Then you have the VM sizes, and then most of this is just sizing and the username that is provisioned on VMs, which defaults to cluster in this case, and the public key to provision the Linux VMs. I never use passwords to provision my Linux VMs, and you shouldn't either. So let me just fold this again and go back here and go back to the variables. The variables themselves, I mean, variables are essentially concatenation of strings in this case. I just take some of the identifiers that were passed in as parameters and create a number of things. For instance, here I have some predefined variables for port numbers, and these here are used to create an array of storage accounts for the VM scale set, which I'll get back to that in a second. Let me just hide this, because if you remember, okay, so going back a bit, our VM scale set runs atop a storage account pool, and there are actually 5 storage accounts here as well. So that's exactly what I was creating with those variables. And then we have the resources themselves. This is the first storage account, which is for diagnostics. This is another for the masters, and this is the loop that loops 5 times, because this is defined to be 5, to manage, IntelliSense is getting in the way there, helps us create those 5 storage accounts in one declaration. So this declaration creates 5 storage accounts. And then we have the virtual network that these machines sit in with a fairly standard address prefix, split into 2 subnets, okay? And I happen to know that the masters will start at 10 because I have it set down there in the virtual machine setting. This is the virtual machine setting for the master. This is probably a little too big, but I mean, this is just so that you get the gist of things, because essentially what this allows me to do is that I can define the whole infrastructure as a piece of code. I have it versioned. I can change it at will. Oh, by the way, I'm running Ubuntu on this. I can change it at will. I can share this definition with other people on my team. I can derive variants from it. So everything is defined here, the whole thing. I mean, even, let me go down a bit. Okay, so these are the load balancers. This is part of the load balancing stuff. And then I have, oh, this is, I'm not using probes actually, but they're defined here nevertheless. And these are the security groups, or rather, if you will, the firewall definitions that protect the masters. Okay, so all of this, and in case you want to follow at home, I've set it up on my GitHub. So I'll just zoom that in so that you can see it. Okay, so it's probably easier for people who are actually attending this. So you can go over to my GitHub, and I use fairly obvious keywords, and you can be sure this will be the one, because I have some similar projects when you find the same drawing. And there are a bunch of notes here, and including some of the commands that I'm going to show you here, and how they work and why they work. So everything that I'm going to do in this demo, you can do at your own leisure, in your own Azure subscription. So let's go back to that, to the template itself, okay? And I mean, that's about it in terms of template. There's not much else to say about it here. What is interesting here is that, let me go back, okay? That after provisioning the infrastructure, I have to provision the machines, right? And one of the things I'm going to do is that not many people know that it is out there, is that I'm going to set up the Linux machines using their own native configuration feature, which is, in this case, Cloud Init. Cloud Init is included in Ubuntu. It's nothing more than a little YAML file with a set of instructions for the machine to run upon first boot. So, and this is a simplified version. So essentially what I'm doing here is that I'm adding the official Docker repository, because I didn't want to use the Docker version that ships with Ubuntu at this point. I'm telling it to install two things, actually more, but these are the two things that you really should install. The first is NTP, because no cluster should ever be deployed without a consistent time base. And then the Docker engine itself. And then what I do that I find essential here is that I set this user to be part of the Docker group so that I don't have to sudo all the commands. It gets a little boring after a while. And then I just enable and start the service. I mean, in real life, these files are here, and I have two separate ones. One for the agents, which are fairly complicated. I'll explain to you why later. These are for the agents. Another thing I install on every machine is fail to ban. This essentially bans IP addresses after a number of failed logins to your SSH server. It's not everything you should do to protect the Linux box, but it's like the basic first step when you expose a box to the internet. Okay, and then you get see the rest of the commands, except I have a few extra ones here that are part of the resizing stuff that I built. So, and let's look at the master one. This is a little more complicated also, and I set up a bunch of little niceties I need to run stuff. So. And of course you can tell the machine to reboot afterwards, but in this case it's not necessary. So going back to Cloud Init and bootstrapping the machines, what we are going to do here is that we are going to package a bunch of things into what is known as custom data. Custom data is a specific parameter in an Azure template that allows you. Just let me find it here. Sorry. Mm-hmm. Not used to this keyboard, sorry. Oh, here it is. Okay, so I have two entries, one for the master, another for the agent, because I have two YAML files, right? So I packed it. So essentially what I do is that I encode these files plus a set of other things into custom data, so that actually into the parameters file, so that these are passed on to the machine when it boots. It then goes into master custom. Okay, then it goes into, this is part of the VM profile that we were looking at earlier. Okay, so this is the VM profile for the masters, okay? And then this parameter goes straight in, and it then gets passed to the virtual machine upon instantiation. You can do this in Azure in a lot of different ways. You can set up an extension that provides you with the boot scripts and on and so forth. But I decided to do this way to show you that if you're a Linux sysadmin, you can use the exact same provisioning scripts that you have to take your machines to Azure. So no overhead here, other than setting up a very simple script that essentially takes these files and the public key, encodes the relevant fields, and generates the parameters file. And then we pass both the parameters and the template to AZ, which is the new Azure CLI, which I'll talk to about in a second. So let me just peek in. Oh, yeah, right. We'll launch the cluster, by the way. So let's get to that then. Sorry about that. So going back here. Okay, so AZ. So what's AZ? AZ is the new Azure CLI. It's the new Azure CLI. It's now written in Python instead of Node. Some people might argue about that. I'm very happy about it. And it's essentially the same as you would have on the original CLI, on the original Linux CLI, which is still here. So I have it installed, I think. Wait, actually, it's a bit, the old one is a bit slower. Must be Node. So, and it has mostly the same commands. AZ is still on beta, but it works well enough that I can use it daily. But if you require some specific features, they might not be there yet. And to use AZ and not spend too much time typing in commands, I built a little, where is it? I built a little makefile. And the makefile has a bunch of things predefined. It's a number of environment variables that will help me instantiate the solution. But essentially, when I do deploy cluster, it's going to do AZ resource group create, resource group name, location, and AZ resource group deployment create. And then it's going to pass on the template file and the parameters file and apply them to this resource group. So I'm going to do exactly that. Sorry about that. So one of the niceties of using make is that I get CLI completion. So make deploy cluster. Bam. Now just wait a bit, and I'm going to go over to my Azure portal. In case you haven't noticed, all of this is Linux, so I'm just going to go over it. Okay, so I have a backup cluster in case anything goes wrong. I mean, you know, live demos, right? So, and we can look at the backup cluster right away, because that way we can have something. Okay, so here are all the resources that were defined in that template, all the resources that you saw in the diagram, all the storage accounts, the network, the public IP addresses, the network security group. This is the interface for the master itself, the interface for all the agents is inside here. This is the load balancer applied to the agent and the master itself, which in this case seems to be in very good working order. So here it is. All the machines are DS1s. One core. I mean, that I don't really need much at this stage, and not at least not for this demo. And of course, I could resize the machines at will and so on and so forth, but that's not the point here. What I want to do later is this is the VM scale set. Okay, this is VM scale set for the backup cluster I had deployed earlier, and you'll see that there are already three machines there running with their own public IP address and their own networking solution built into the scale set. Let's go over and see if our own cluster is done yet, because the CLI will take a little longer to return, because that's the way the CLI is built. It makes sure that everything is committed. But okay, so Chrome has been acting up here, so I wouldn't be surprised if Chrome crashed in this machine. So I need to upgrade it, I suppose. Okay, here we go. Okay, so pretty much everything's there already, so it's probably just waiting for the machines to boot, which should be happening, or creating, right? Okay, yeah, they're already running. Okay, so what's the hang up here? Okay, so make a list. I've prepared another thing, so all the machines should be running. Succeeded, all of them are running already. So let me just watch this command so that we have another dashboard to look at. Okay, here, this will update every 2 seconds. Oh, it's done. Okay, so right now, now that we've deployed the cluster, what is running right now? So right now, like I pointed out earlier, we have the master running with these ports open, okay, and Docker daemon running on all the machines, and all the agents are behind this load balancer. So nothing much to it. I mean, so far so good. Let's see what's inside then. The first way to see what's inside is fairly obvious. It's just make. So since I have to use a separate key, I did find a shortcut for this. Oh, sorry about that. SSH known hosts. That's what comes with doing this a lot of times a day. So, okay, so now I have the proper key. And here we are. So we're inside the master now, which is a fairly standard machine. I mean, like I pointed out, we see Docker daemon running on there and a little agent running. We'll see what's that later. And so we can do Docker is running. And I can say this Docker info. Let me just page that. And no containers running, nothing's happening. But we do have one manager node and 4 nodes in total. Okay, keep this because Swarm doesn't really make a distinction between the master node and the other nodes. So if I do Docker node ls, all of them appear at the same time. And the manager is pointed out as being the leader of the cluster. But I mean, when I schedule things on top of the cluster, the master will take on containers as well by default. You can change this by using tagging, but I mean the default will be that that the master will also accept running containers. So, but let's find another. Oops, sorry, GitHub is hacking up apparently. So, but let's do this. Let's do something else. I mean, one of the things I have here that is very useful is a little visualizer. This is the Docker image name. I'm going to deploy it. Deploy monitor. Okay, so now I'm going to I'm SSHing into the master and it's pulling the visualizer in. And this is going to be fairly quick, although the visualizer does take a little while to start up because it has to initialize some things internally. So, and one of the things I'll be doing is, and I'm going to go over here and do master. Okay, and this is the port that it's going to listen in. It's not going to be running just yet. Okay, it's still loading. Okay, but this. Okay, so it should be running. I can go back into the cluster and do a Docker PS. And it's still starting. It's since setting up NPM, so God knows how long it'll take. No, but it should be up about now, so. Oh, not quite just yet. Okay. Oh, sorry. Looking at the wrong master here. Oh, here we are. So here we are. We have one master, 3 agents. Okay. Fairly standard stuff here. These are just machines without any containers running in them. So let's go over and deploy some services. I've also scripted that, of course, so that it didn't take too long. So, and I'm going to go back into my own machine and do make deploy. Oh, now I have 2 things. I have a global service and a replicated service. Let's deploy the global service, okay? What is this doing then? It's just started, and it's deploying this image, which is also included in the GitHub project I showed you. It's just a little demo front end. It's starting that on all machines because it's a global service, which means that Swarm will deploy one instance of the service per node. And I've also set a couple of environment variables just for convenience. And once these are up now, I can just go over, bad GitHub. I can just go over here, and since the master is part of the cluster and shares the Swarm load balancing, I just go over to here to port 81. And here we are. This is probably unreadable for you guys, so let me just zoom in a bit. Okay, so this is a little demo app that you can just talk to it, and it will increase the number of requests and give you a timestamp. And this is the container host name that I'm talking to. And after a few requests, this will eventually change. Out here it is, when Swarm does the load balancing, we can confirm that this is the application I launched because these are the environment variables I set. Okay, so regardless of the host name I'm talking to, these environment variables are set, and I'm running this service. And this is just HTTP stuff that I use because I use this application to do a lot of testing for some load balancing scenarios. Okay, and now I'm going to deploy a replicated service. Okay, which actually uses the same image. So let's go back to the visualizer before I forget. Oh, sorry about that. Okay, the visualizer is now going to show us four. The visualizer takes a little while to catch up. Okay, so here we are. Now we have four instances of the global service, one per node, and two instances of this new service. Why? Because when I did service create, and I'm publishing on port 80, I'll get in that. I told it that I wanted 8 replicas anywhere in the cluster. And also set these variables so we can verify that this is work. This is actually there by going to same IP address. Okay. Going to port 80. And here we are. I think it's readable already. I mean, here we're talking to the same. This is the same code running as a different application. Okay. I'm just using the same application twice. But this one is running in replicated mode, and this is on port 80. And I mean, if I don't want to use the Swarm load balancer, I just go over here. Oh, hi, Pedro. Nice to see you again. I probably need to shut down TweetDeck for a while. I had an earlier discussion about clustering, so it's coming back to haunt me. So we're going back here to the masters here. Okay, so I want agent. I want the agent LB, which is the load balancer I set. And I'm now talking to port. I actually wanted to talk to port. Port 80 is fine. I'm not talking to the replicated application, but through the Azure load balancer, okay? And the behavior is a little different. It's also sticky. But, I mean, you can see it by the way that the first hit I did what changed nodes. Okay, bad GitHub. Bad. Okay, so, and it'll eventually change because both load balancers do their own, they try to be sticky in terms of session management, so, but we can now access the both applications using the Azure load balancer, which is fine and good, I mean. So, right now I can do a lot of stuff with this. I'm just going to move this aside a bit and change the size of it because you don't, what we want to do next, we just need to count boxes, so I'm going to move this away. And so, let's say I wanted to scale the service, right? Oh, I could just go over and do make scale service 4, and this replicated service was scaled down to 4, right? And if I want to do 10. Then it's going to start 10 replicas anywhere in the cluster. And then as you can see, it's not very balanced here, okay? Let's go back to the slide deck here and revisit some of the key concepts. So right now, again, we have a global service that is running one instance per node and a replicated service, okay? Nothing to it, okay? But what if we want to scale the cluster itself? I mean, scaling the container is very easy. I mean, just go over here and say scale to 20 or to 40. And I can even go nuts and just do 400 containers in a single node. It'll just Swarm will just try to do it. Although after a while, as Docker service. So and I have 72 replicas out of 400. Swarm is still trying to cope, and my machine isn't handling it that well, right? So at this point, I definitely need more infrastructure. I'm just going to scale it down a little, but just to give you an idea, right now, as you can see, I can see the state of either service, and I can also see all the processes associated with each. Oh, sorry, forgot. Let's use the global service, which is a little more manageable. Okay, so I have four processes for the global service, and and I have entirely too many for the replicated one. But apparently, I already have 400 instances running. Didn't take much actually, but here it is. So okay, so but let's go back and just scale this down a tad, like to 40, which is a little nicer and sort of fits into the visualizer. Okay, so as you can see, Swarm, the visualizer is still trying to cope, but Swarm. Okay, so now we have 40 instances of the service. Okay. But what if we want to scale the machines themselves? Okay, so VM scale sets allow you to do that in a very easy way, and we're going to see the command line for that. I'm going to, just going to add four more nodes, so that will be seven agents. Okay, and this is a ZVMSS scale bad GitHub. Resource group swarm. Agent, this is the agent scale set, and I just say new capacity 7. And what's happening behind the scenes? Behind the scenes here is, am I looking at the right one? I'm not sure at this point, but let's admit this is very small, so for me. So now this is, yeah, I'm looking at the right one. Oh, sorry about that. I need to refresh that because Chrome has been acting up here, like I told you, in agent. And right now, we have four more machines starting. And actually, I could see that here. This is the little command I left running earlier. So this will update it roughly at the same time as the portal. There are multiple levels of caching here. And right now, these machines are starting, okay, and eventually they'll pop up here. Why is that? Why will that happen? Because within, remember when the YAML file had all those extra commands in there? Well, this is what's happening. This is what's going to happen behind the scenes. I have a little server running on the master that when a Docker wakes up on actually when systemd wakes up on the worker, the systemd will do a curl request, ask for the token, and join the cluster automatically. And then when we shut down the machine, systemd will also start curl to hit this specific URL, and dockerd will know that the worker is leaving the cluster. Okay, so right now this will probably take, okay, the VMs are running. Okay, this one is still not quite all there yet. But we can see that little server I mentioned by doing make tail helper. Yeah, this is it. Okay, so, and here we are. So some machines have already asked to join the cluster, and they should be popping up here. Oops, sorry. Terribly sorry. Oh, here they are. See? Still saw one of them pop up. So, and as you can see, the global service is already running on them. So if you want to scale a service based on Docker, you can set up a VM scale set with a global service inside it, and the global service will just scale up as you scale up the scale set. This is very nice for CPU heavy loads, like for instance graphics rendering that do not take advantage or much advantage of running many separate containers. Okay, and as you can also see, I mean, Swarm hasn't rebalanced the load. It doesn't do that. That's not part of what it's supposed to do. Let's rescale. Let me just make this visible for you. Scale service. Okay, so let me put 10 again. So a lot of these will just vanish. Okay, a lot of the containers have just vanished. We just have 10. Then if I scale it up again to 40, then it will start being deployed on the other nodes. So, and even then, I mean, you can certainly see that this is not very well balanced, right? So the fun part is that we can scale the VM scale set down as well. So scale VMSS. I'm going to scale it. I had set up 7 agents. I'm going to set up 5. And when I say, I'm going to tell it to scale to 5. This is what I'm looking for. Oh, these two machines are being deleted. And I can watch that happen as well on the Azure portal. If in a few seconds, that's what Chrome gives you. I mean, okay, so here we are. Bad GitHub. Go away. It's updating. It's still updating. So, this is one of the reasons I use this, because Chrome, for some reason, doesn't deal with WebSocket very well in this case. So eventually it'll show the machines going away. But what is happening right now is that the nodes have been drained. So what happened, they are leaving the swarm. And now this one is already gone, and this one is too. And Swarm rebalanced on the other way. So if you size down the infrastructure, Swarm will try to keep the same number of instances running. So it moved, or actually it copied or ran new instances of the service on the surviving machines. And I mean, when I refresh the visualizer, I only get 5 machines plus the worker, plus the master like I wanted. And everything's piled up, jumbled up, where Storm saw fit. I mean, this is all fine and good, but the real power of Azure is when you do stuff like this. I mean, this is still happening. Let's just let it clean up house. Okay, let's just review what is happening here. Okay, so the agent signaled that they were going to leave the cluster. They hit the drain URL, and my codes told the Swarm to remove the nodes, okay? And in the meantime, so here we are, so the VMS, so there was a shutdown request, the nodes are drained, and the VMs are going to be stopped. Eventually, I can restart the VMs, and the whole cycle will begin again. But this is the way the whole thing works, and the way it works is fairly easy to find. I'm just going to show you where it is. You can look it up on GitHub later. The entire web server to manage the cluster is hidden away inside the Cloud Init file. This is it, Swarm Helper. It's a little bottle Python server that when you hit a specific URL returns a token, and when you hit the drain URL, it then removes the update, removes the node from the cluster, and that's it, really. It couldn't be simpler. It's also not very, future-proof or production-ready, but it's a very nice way to get started, and I've listed most of the things that need enhancing in GitHub itself. So you should be able to, the machines have already been cleared, right? You should be able to read the documentation and extend this yourselves. But in the meantime, okay, now I've scaled to 5, why don't I scale it up to 50? Which is entirely feasible, I mean, there's no problem with that. So this is going to take a little while to catch up again, but let's go back to our little monitor here. Oh, here we are. I don't want to attend the meeting right now. Okay, so and it's now creating 50 VMs. Okay, and the Chrome has figured out the portal is updating. Okay, good. Eventually it'll get... Oh, there it was. Sorry. I tend to, I hit the right, oh no, sorry. Again, Chrome got confused. Okay, and here we are, creating 50 VMs without any hitch. I mean, it's going to take a few seconds. But I mean, you can't do this on premises. And it's certainly very nice to know that these VMs will be essentially identical. I'm going to make a little room for them because we're going to need all the room we can get on this browser. Still creating. In a few seconds, I'll be able to show you something like 10,000 containers running in a single Swarm cluster in Azure. As soon as this is done. Okay, so this will take. Okay, they're already starting. Okay, so they'll start run. Okay, some of them are already running. So let's go over to the visualizer and force a few refreshes so that we can see them being added to the cluster. Shouldn't take too long. I've already gotten one request here. Okay, I need to fix this. This is because I have the repo cloned, and for some reason I need to verify my SSH key. Here's one, two. I think I can leave it running now. Three, four. See here, the requests are happening here. Five, and so on and so forth. And right now, I'm going to see if I can leave this running here and see. I can't really watch. Okay. Make list VMSS. Okay. Grep running. Let's see how many are running at this point. This is not the string I was looking for. Let me just check this again. I probably mistyped something. Succeeded. I wanted to look for succeeded, not running. Running is what is displayed on the portal. Succeeded. Okay, so right now we have 38 VMs. That makes sense. See? 40 VMs, make them a little bigger, 41, and they will just keep popping up. I mean, sometimes they pop up in clusters of 4 and 8 and so on and so forth, but I suspect that the visualizer is not updating properly. Oh yeah, right, it's not. So it's nearly done, and what I can go over to the next stage, which is to go over here again, take my service. Okay, I can try to do it here. So, Docker scale Docker service. Okay, scale. What is the name? That service LS. Oh, replicated scale replicated. 100, 200. Oh, sorry. That's what comes with using multiple. 200 containers. Fine. I'm sorry, but I did promise you guys a bit more, right? So let's up this a notch. So let's say 5,000 containers. Okay, I mistyped that, but 500 containers on 50 VMs. Right, so, and this is rest. Since Swarm doesn't schedule this very well and the visualizer has a few bugs, this is not very tidy, but if I move a little further back. Oh, this is good enough, I suppose. So here we are, 500 containers running on 50 VMs. I could just as easily have done 100 and 1,000, and I can still go to 1,000 containers, no sweat there. But I mean, it's a nice way to show how easily you can scale up your services on the cloud these days. So I think the visualizer is going to crash with 1,000 containers, but let's try it again. Nearly there. Oh, here we are, 1,000 containers. Sight for sore eyes, huh? Okay, so let's go back to our slides. This is it, really. I hope you've enjoyed the session. You can find the template and all the scripts I used on this GitHub repository. And as an added bonus, you can use the same Linux sandbox I used for this demo, which is a complete Azure toolbox in a Docker container on this repo. Also, a shout out for Laurel Comics, who does amazing Docker artwork. And this is it, really. Thank you for your time. Check out our upcoming masterclasses, and I hope you've enjoyed being here with me.